Mills Concert Hall is quite a place. And I first came in contact with it about 1952 or 53 after I got here,
mm-hmm.
when I came from Houston to San Francisco. And I never went to Mills as a student, but the most of avant-garde music was always played in the Mills Concert Hall.
Even in the 50s?
Yes.
Okay.
And even before that, because John Cage and Henry Cowell were here, and, it's got an amazing history.
Okay.
And at the moment, David Bernstein, who's the chairman of the department, is working on a book about the music department at Mills. And I was talking to William O. Smith, you know, while we were at the Berkshire Music Festival last week. And Bill was a student of Mio's in the 40s, along with Dave Brubeck and so on. And I used to come over here for concerts and like that. And then eventually, 1966 is when the Tape Center made its move to Mills. And then Morton went to New York, and Ramon went to a commune, and I became the director, along with Anthony Martin, who was doing the visual work. We co-directed. That was a whole year, and it was the first salaried position I ever had. No, and that's not exactly true, because I had worked in an office in 1952 in downtown San Francisco, but and music, this was the first time I had a position that paid me, you know, salary.
I see. So, and that's about 10 years after you moved to San Francisco.
No, it's more like 14, 15 years, because I sustained myself, you know, by teaching students and piecing it together with a variety of different activities.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, how was, I've been working with your mother, helping her with a project of letters that you wrote back and forth.
Right.
You seem to have saved pretty much everything she sent you.
Oh, I did, yeah.
And then she now has those, and she's going through those, and she's finding letters that you had sent to her. You know, what we've looked at are largely from 52, 53 so far. You were at the University of Houston at that time.
Yeah.
Studying music.
Yeah.
But for some reason, you knew you had to get out of Houston.
Yes, that's right.
So what drove you to San Francisco?
It was a quest. You know, a quest to find the kind of mentoring and support that I needed to be a composer. You know, the thought that there was music here that didn't exist elsewhere, so I wanted to come here.
And the Bay Area at that time was even then considered an area where avant-garde music or...
Well, there was the Composers Forum, and there was the scene here at Mills. And there was Houston Berkeley, where a lot of stuff was happening. Actually, the composition teacher that I had at the University of Houston was friends with Wendell Odey, who had a composer's workshop at San Francisco State, which is where I went to school. And so I met him, eventually enrolled in there, the state. And, you know, the tuition was only $28.50 a semester then. Well, I could afford to go.
Even as an out-of-state student?
Well, I was, after a year, I was a resident. And so that's, largely it was economics that had me go to state.
Uh-huh.
I think I even got a scholarship to go there.
Uh-huh.
To take care of my tuition.
Well, I mean, that when you're, you know, struggling as a musician, anything helps.
Yeah, anything at all helps.
But it's also at San Francisco State that you met Robert Erickson?
Yes, that was, very, really fortuitous and important.
Yeah, he seems to have been quite a mover in, as far as getting a lot of music performed.
Yes, well, that was his thing. He came to San Francisco in 1953, I believe it was, yeah. And then I met him by 1904, I think. Oh, yeah, I think that was when it was. I'd have to verify that, but it was what happened was that he had a piece played in the composer's workshop concert, and I had one as well. It was a string quartet.
Uh-huh.
It was a trio for viola and piano. It was called the Little Trio. So when I heard his loved it. And he expressed a lot of interest in mine. And then, so I brought him the quartet to look at, because I had one of the movements wasn't played because it was too hard for the quartet, so he wanted to see it. And his comments were really very wonderful, and I asked him if it was possible to study with him, and so that's how I got started.
I see. Had you decided before then that you wanted to concentrate on composition, or was it at that time?
Oh, yeah, no. My decision came when I was 16, yeah, before I had any idea of how to do it.
You were also a French horn player and an accordion player when you were
right.
in Houston.
Yeah.
In fact, you played in the orchestra, did you not?
Yes, I did.
As a horn player. Did you continue studying also instrumentally in San Francisco? Or?
Yeah, I studied with Earl Saxon, who was the horn player in the San Francisco Symphony. And actually, I became his assistant and taught students, private students. That he gave me.
So the type of teaching you were doing was mostly horn or
horn
instrumental?
Horn and accordion.
What transition took place from those days?
Okay, well, 58, I started a master's program at State, and then I dropped out of it because it didn't feel like it was supporting my composition. So I was, just kind of doing freelance work and trying to keep it together and writing music, studying with Bob Erickson.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1960 is when we started what was to become the San Francisco Tate Music Center with Ramon Sender. That institution, organization, whatever it was very crucial to my development and as a landing place, because I was out of school, I was in the world, there was nothing really supportive about it except for the individual contact that I had.
Mm-hmm.
But the Tape Center became a locus, a place, a context for the work that I was doing.
Uh-huh. And it was Ramon Sender who you credit with actually the germ of the idea for that?
Well, it was yeah, Ramon. I think he was the mover and shaker. He was the magnet that pulled it together, yeah.
And how did you meet?
Well, we met in Robert Erickson's class seminar at the conservatory.
Oh, okay. So he was also a student in composition then?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. And then how did the other people who are associated, such as Morton Subotnick?
Well, Mort came into the picture after we had launched this thing at the conservatory. It's something, it was called Sonic. And it consisted of a kind of a jerry-rigged studio and some concerts that we put on. And then Morton came in, and, one thing led to another until he and Morton got the 501c3 eventually, and it went on from there.
Yeah, it's amazing when one realizes all the people who went through the Tape Center.
Oh, yeah, no, it's quite an interesting history.
I mean, even John Chowning, who one wouldn't think,
mm-hmm.
Apparently was there, and then, of course,
Well, what happened in 1963-64 was that I organized this festival called the Tudor Fest, because I had met David Tudor in 1963, and we started to work together. And so then we decided to do a festival, and we did it at the Tape Center, and it was a six-day festival, three programs that were repeated. So it was the music of John Cage, Toshi Itzanagi, Alvin Lucier, and myself.
And
all of us around the Tape Center, including Terry and John Chowning, came and performed, and Lauren Rush and Steve Rice, and on were performing in those programs.
I see.
And John Cage came, as did Toshi and Toru Takemitsu and Kunihara Wakayama, who else? They were on their way to the East-West Festival in Hawaii.
I see.
They were all there.
Wow.
So you can see that it had, had some impact.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine what those times must have been like.
For me, was a wonderful time in many ways because, you know, there was such a lot of interesting stuff happening. And, you know, it was very exciting, you know, working around in electronic music and trying to put it together and having it be, the sounds were so new and fresh.
But also that there was support.
Yes, well, we supported one another. We had a building, I mean, we had a space, and it used to be a Masonic place or something. It was a cooperative. I mean, there was the tape center with an upstairs studio, and then downstairs there was a hall, which seated 150, and adjoining was a dance studio, which where Anna Halpern had her dances workshop. And then there was a studio room between the two, which KPFA used as a remote studio.
Oh.
And I think also Canyon Cinema was involved in the co-op for a while.
Jeez.
So that made a really interesting place.
Sure.
And it was a prototype. You know, I mean, the only thing remotely resembling it was the Once Group in Ann Arbor with Bob Ashley and Gordon Mumma and, you know, all of those.
Right, yes.
But we had this, and then we, you know, we had performance. We did subscription concerts. We developed a subscription audience and had two concerts a month that were repeated. I mean, one program that we did twice every month.
It is amazing. It also seems to be a prototype for the artist spaces, which developed.
Yes, it was
in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s.
It was that. It was one of the first alternative spaces, I'd say.
So after the Tape Music Center, did you go directly to San Diego?
Yeah, it was 1 year here at Mills, and then I accepted the job at San Diego and was there for 14 years.
Uh-huh. And, of course, the amazing story is that you left there.
Yeah.
A position that was very secure. fortunately, to do better things.
Well, to do other things.
Well, I mean, being quite a prolific composer, although you seem to be composing quite a bit during that period also.
Well, pretty much, yeah.
There's certainly a lot more music of yours available to the public, I think, since that time. Being in an academic setting, did you find that it changed the concerns in your music? Or did it give you a certain amount of freedom to explore things you wouldn't have explored otherwise?
Well, I actually started my sonic meditations while I was there at San Diego. And it was partly in response to a large music course for a general student. There were 150 students usually in this class. It was called The Nature of Music. And the idea was not to give them a music appreciation course, but to actually give them a hands-on experience of making music. I began to use some of the materials to have them do that. And then I had a group of women that met at my house once a week. And that's where the sonic meditations really got going, was with that women's group.
I see. Yeah, I would think you would need a group of people, first, smaller than 150.
Yeah. Although it's fun to do things with 150 too.
Well, sure. But it's hard to be intimate. But also a group that you could really trust.
Yeah, this is true. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. But it all, for me, it was all a compositional problem.
It's also at that time that your music was published by Smith Publications?
Yeah, Smith Publications. I got started with her.
I guess she's out of Maryland, or?
She's in Baltimore, yeah.
Baltimore. And another of your works, I guess this would be toward the end of your time in San Diego, is The Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
In which the score was published in a journal in Cologne, Germany, I believe.
Oh, in the Music Tech.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
There's a beautiful, I suppose it's in your hand, laying out in the Chinese hexagrams of what I guess is the Wheel of the I Ching, the Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
I was pleased and surprised to see that, you know, reference to the I Ching. What is the influence there for you?
The influence?
Yes. I mean, is it more out of a study of the I Ching? Is it through John Cage?
Well, I mean, naturally you would reference it to Cage since he was the one that started to use it so much. Because Christian gave it to him.
Right.
The thing is that my use of it is probably not like how John Cage used it. The work that I do is really very different. I use chance operations too, but not exactly in the same way. But the hexagrams I was using for the their images, and I think I also was getting numbers from them to derive pictures from the harmonic series.
Yeah, actually, in the layout of that piece, it seems to me as if it was more taking the structure of this image of the Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
And also using it as a metaphor for the piece.
Yes.
Exactly. So in a way, it really isn't a random piece at all.
No, not exactly.
Although the most random part to me is the electronics you use in that piece.
The electronics?
Yes. I guess this was realized in the computer studios at San Diego.
Yeah, really. And that's, I would, today I'd like to revise, not revise the pictures or anything, but just the realization. I would not like to use the tape of it. Because my original idea was to have string sound. And I think maybe now I could get what I wanted.
Although there are interesting timbres that are in there.
Yes, it really comes from the pitch relationships of the harmonic series.